bold and raw perspectives of local politics. Important information which impacts our community, nation, and world. Exposing truth, transparency, and getting to the heart of relevant issues that you just won't see in the clickbait media. And always keeping it real. It's the Michelle Tanner Podcast.
But I won't back down.
Welcome, welcome to the Michelle Tanner Podcast. We had a really big day yesterday, Super Tuesday. I hope everybody turned out to their caucus. I know not everybody did, by the way, because I think the turnout was actually still quite low. I know in my own precinct, it was actually kind of sad. I think we did have a bigger turnout this year than 2 years ago, but still, guys, I mean, come on. This is our country. This is how we save this nation. I said last night, actually, in my speech, I became a state delegate and a county delegate again. And I said, look, we don't need a revolution. That's already happened. Our founders did that for us. We need a restoration. And how do we do that? It is right here in our local communities. It's at the grassroots level. It is a bottoms up approach. And so that's actually what I really appreciate about my guest today that we will hear from here shortly. I have Senate candidate, U.S. Senate candidate, Mayor Trent Staggs here that's going to be joining me via Skype. I do want to give a quick shout out to the St. George Sunrise Market. They had their debut market this last Saturday. The weather was crazy. Like, literally, people were blowing away. The winds were so bad, but it was still so amazing to see such an awesome turnout. So they're going to be there nearly every Saturday over at the Segmiller Park. That's near Little Valley area, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So many different vendor options, farmers market. Definitely check them out. Such a really cool, awesome environment. So again, that's the St. George Sunrise Market. All right. So Trent Staggs, thanks for joining me, by the way. You've been on before, so thanks for jumping on again, because it's been several months since you've been on.
It has. Yeah. Great to be with you again, Michelle. Thank you for having me. And yeah, last night, that was a big night. And I'm really, really grateful that we have our caucus system, albeit SB 54 is really tried to damage it. But it is very important. It's vitally important that people go out and do that. And, you know, I'm one that had committed day one to run just through the caucus convention system, because I believe that is the best process by which our party can nominate its candidates. I think we come up with the most informed and really, you know, passionate people that end up becoming delegates. And I want to leave it in their hands in terms of, you know, who gets our nomination. And I think we had a great night last night. I'm hearing from many people across the state that I know are supportive of my candidacy and grateful that they were willing to go out and participate in their neighborhood caucus. And many of them I know that are now become state delegates.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's really admirable of you, by the way, to go the convention only route. That does take a lot of faith. You know, we know other candidates are going out there and essentially paying money to gather signatures, because there's really, it's difficult to gather that number of signatures without paying, you know, at least $10 a signature, I think, for most candidate. So bravo for trusting the delegate system. That's huge. I think it was really interesting last night. We'll still see, I guess, as final numbers come in. I know down here in Washington County, Trump had a clean sweep in our presidential preference poll down here. I mean, 70-80% dominating Haley. But I think, what was the final, or what's the current total statewide with Trump versus Haley right now?
Yeah, we had something similar in our precinct. I mean, it was a good 75-80% or more in support of President Trump. And, you know, I endorsed him, the first one to endorse in this race. I did it last summer. Statewide, I'm looking at the totals on the state GOP website. I think about 90% of precincts are in, and it's around 57-42 Trump-Haley right now. So it was kind of surprising. There were a lot of counties that were pretty much 50-50, or where Haley was slightly ahead. And that to me was really kind of interesting. I think there was some effort on the part of a lot of moderates and even some Democrats, I think, to push out and attend the caucus and try to give that kind of support, you know, with Haley coming in here the other week and trying to rally. And, you know, you've got the governor or the governor's, you know, lieutenant governor and his wife, the governor's wife, really in support of Nikki Haley. And I just feel like, look, we need to get behind President Trump. I'm excited to do that, be out there, be an America First candidate, the America First candidate in this race. And it's been really overwhelming. And yeah, back to the caucus convention system. I believe in it. I committed to that process. You remember this, Michelle, months ago, you know, when I announced my candidacy last May, I said, we're going through the caucus convention system. I'm a man of my word. We've kept it. And even though, you know, we've received $1 million or more from in our campaign, I could have gone out and bought signatures, but I don't think that that's the process that we need to go by. You know, I've had some great fundraising events, was invited at Mar-a-Lago. We've done a number of events, and I've been humbled by the amount of support that we've received across the state. But I believe, again, that the caucus convention system is the way to go. And I think that we're going to be rewarded by our message and those delegates that see my passion for the caucus convention system. At least that's my belief. And I think based on last night, we're going to be just fine.
Yeah. And I appreciate you taking that stance and approach of being so quick out of the gate and willing to endorse Trump early on, even when it may have been, you know, not the political thing to do. As you see, most of the others kind of waited till they saw the final polls and it wasn't going to shift that way. And okay, it's going to be Trump regardless. So, okay, yeah, now we'll endorse him. But no, you actually took a stand. You endorsed him right away, right out of the gate. And you're the only candidate who wasn't afraid to take on Romney, correct? You're the only one who announced your candidacy when it was still unsure if Romney was actually going
That's
to run.
That's right. And in fact, and on Trump, you know, President Trump, we have one of the major candidates here, a candidate who still has said he hasn't come out and said whether he would endorse President Trump. And you're right. Others came out just after President Trump won the Iowa caucuses or just recently here. And, you know, for me, it was last summer, wrote an op-ed in The Washington Times, said, nope, we need his strength right away. We need it back in office. Listed a number of reasons why on the policy front, but also very personally. I mean, one of my residents, Josh Holt, was imprisoned in Venezuela in the socialist dictator country. And it was his strength, the strength of President Trump, that got him out of that situation, forced the Maduro regime to bring him back home. And so to me, it's very personal, too. I actually talked about that in my speech at CPAC. That is something that I came out first and also first one to run against Mitt Romney. We were in it no matter what. Everybody else that's in this race only came in after Mitt Romney said he wasn't going to seek re-election in late September. And we started out in May. Romney was at about 50% favorability amongst Republican primary voters. And, you know, after we got 1 million hits on our launch video across social media and doing 50 town halls or more, reminding Utahns about what Mitt Romney had committed to 5 years ago and what he's delivered and how they're completely different. He went down to 30% favorability. And I have no doubt that that has a lot to do with why he's not seeking reelection. And it came as no surprise to me that he's not seeking it. But that's what I think this election is all about. We need somebody with demonstrated backbone, with the ability to take on the establishment. I've done that time and time again in elected office, my 10 years now going on 11 years in Riverton, but also in the way in which I've run my campaign, as you point out, being the only one willing to challenge Mitt Romney.
Yeah. And speaking of Mitt Romney, I want to clarify a few things because, of course, you see the media headlines, you know, people who are probably working for other campaigns will send out different social media memes. And one of the ones that I'm sure you've seen that's been going around is when Mitt Romney endorsed I think it was probably your first candidacy for mayor, probably long before we really knew how bad Mitt Romney was. But they're trying to use that as an image of as if Mitt Romney is endorsing your current Senate campaign, yeah. Which, you know, anyone who's been paying attention knows that's very far from the truth. But maybe address right. What that endorsement was all about that was from Mitt Romney previously.
Right. That was in a 2020 mayoral race for Salt Lake County. And they offered up his endorsement, largely because of my opponent at the time was one that he ran against in 2018 on the Democratic side. And so, in a general election race, we took that endorsement. I remind folks that even Mike Lee back in 22 in his race, general election race, had sought the endorsement of Mitt Romney. As we're in these kind of tighter elections, and that, unfortunately, I'm finding that you have some out there all too eager to show that endorsement as if he were supportive of me in this race.
Right.
Or that I had any respect for his endorsement and for his his way in which he's represented Utah, which is clearly not the case. Me being willing to take him on, writing an opinion piece straight away. Enough is enough was the title of my op-ed. Why I'm going to replace Mitt Romney. Enough is enough. Why I'm going to replace Mitt Romney. I've been out there challenging him, calling him out in national media time and time again. I mean, there's been nobody in Utah, I believe, in elected office in particular, that's been more critical of Mitt Romney. And so to try to imply that an endorsement from 4 years ago in another race is somehow tied to this one is really disingenuous. And, those people that are sharing that, I just tell folks, look, if you have any questions about my candidacy, let me know. But I'm very clear on this. I've been the only one willing to challenge Mitt Romney and called him out time and time again. That's typified my time in office, and you're going to see that from me going back to D.C. and representing our great state.
Yeah, and I think that's important because the last thing we want is to send someone back there, which has happened time and time again, who just becomes part of the swamp. They become the puppet doing whatever they're told. They're not going to say anything or speak up or actually be a voice for the people if it's not what's politically correct at the time or not what they're, those funding their campaigns want them to do, right? So I appreciate that it seems that you're willing to take bold stances and speak up for the truth. So thank you for that. I want to also clarify some other media headlines that have gone around these last couple of weeks. Mayor Trent Staggs receives Global Statesman Award from U.S. Global Leadership Coalition. Mayor Trent Staggs recognized by U.S. Global Leadership for community leadership. You probably saw the one that was trying to tie you to a George Soros-backed group where Hunter Biden served on the board. So I've been seeing these things buzz around lately. And obviously, as someone who's a liberty-loving American, true conservative, the last thing we want is, this globalist agenda, right? So can you maybe explain what some of these headlines are all about and the context of this?
Sure, sure. And I think what's fascinating about all this, too, is the timing of it. Mm. I mean, remember, I called out Mitch McConnell. Mike Lee has really been leading the charge there, and I've been also trying to lead it as well, that we cannot have Mitch McConnell in leadership anymore. And there's a Blaze article that ran literally two days before this U.S. Global Leadership article came out, which I think is fake news. The way that they've positioned it. So my article at The Blaze pledging not to support Mitch McConnell and calling on other Senate candidates, and to the credit of four or five of my Senate candidate colleagues, they committed to not support Mitch McConnell, me taking the lead on this. And, we had a couple of candidates, John Curtis and Brad Wilson, that wouldn't commit to that. In fact, John Curtis indicated that he would support anybody who might better the state of Utah, he claimed. So I think that's interesting that we have me taking such a bold stance against McConnell. And I had people tell me, watch out, the establishment's going to come after you. And sure enough, two days later, I get this hit piece put out on me that says that I'm tied somehow to this globalist organization. Look, the U.S. Global Leadership Coalition is a free trade organization. It's something that is trying to advocate for American leadership on the world stage instead of having globalist organizations like the World Economic Forum dictate to the United States what to do. I looked at the Utah Advisory Council before becoming, receiving the award. We had people like Greg Hughes that had served on it for years, Sean Reyes, Boyd Matheson. They had all kinds of conservatives that were listed on their advisory council for years. And on the national side of the organization, you have Robert O'Brien, that was the former national security advisor to Trump, and about 20 or 30 Trump, ex-Trump officials that make up their conservative foreign policy group. So with that backdrop, receiving an award from them, I haven't been affiliated at all with them for some, you know, about a year now, but really, I'm willing to advance American interests at any point in time, and also always talk about free trade and trying to promote, you know, American business abroad. I took an energy company public that had operations internationally too, and, you know, I want to see American business, especially Utah-based businesses, really do well internationally, and so that's what that organization is about. But yeah, I guess they had some donations that they take in from all over, and one was tied to a Soros group apparently that came before my time. And it's just to think that I have ever received funding from globalist organizations or from people like George Soros is just laughable. I mean, I haven't. I wouldn't be out there running a shoestring campaign the way that I have in a true grassroots campaign if I had all the money in the world and funded by lobbyists and globalist organizations. I mean, that's not my camp. There are others that are running that are very well funded and have millions of dollars through lobbyist donations and others. That's just not me, and it's not my my candidacy.
Yeah, thanks for providing some clarity. And what was the context of that award then? That was, or was there two awards received? What was the context behind that?
I think it was really just trying to identify someone like me who was in a mayoral role, like in a role locally, that also has business experience. And so the company that I helped take public again had international experience. So that was something they wanted to be able to highlight. And if you look at my speech, I think it's still online there, my speech for the award that was given to me, it was all focused on free trade and advancing American interests abroad and exporting what I think are some of our greatest values, our Constitution, and representative democracy or constitutional republic. And so that's really, I think, the basis of the award was to be able to recognize me in that capacity as somebody who's leading a community in my mayoral position and also having the business experience that I did.
So what do you see as some of the biggest threats to our constitutional republic? I mean, we should be a constitutional republic anyway. We know we've swayed from there in some ways for sure. But what are the big issues that you're going to tackle back in D.C.?
Well, boy, there are a number. And that's one of the things that got me into this race. It's, you know, what Mitt Romney said 5 years ago seemed to be, you know, sounds appealing. You know, he said in a commercial that he was going to balance the budget. He was going to put us on or end federal overreach. And he said he was going to stop illegal immigration, that he was going to confirm conservative justices to the court. I mean, thankfully, despite the support of Ketanji Brown Jackson that Mitt Romney provided, we thankfully still have a conservative court. But I think the judges and what senators do is be able to confirm justices to the Supreme Court and also federal judges. That is very important. That cannot be underestimated. The impact that has on maintaining the constitutional republic that we have, that we should be having. So that's a big issue. I see the other threats that we have is the debt that we have, this open border, which is just overrunning communities. And I mean, I've even seen impact in my own community. That is not sustainable. It has got, there are a lot of issues that are tied to that. I think it's done by design, by woke progressives that want to try to import what they see as future voters, sadly. And more and more of that big government, and it's tied to the debt as well. The government is doing so much more than our founders ever envisioned. There in Article 1, Section 8, we the people have given these roles, responsibilities to the federal government, but they're doing so much more because they, this establishment group, wants to create a dependent culture. They want to have a dependency set, and that is a huge threat to the maintenance of a constitutional republic. This huge, huge debt, and having all these programs out there that can create a dependency culture, I think is a big, big deal. And then, of course, these globalists and international organizations, I think are, we need to, I've been calling for it too for a long time, to defund the UN. I think we give some $16 billion a year to the UN, which includes the World Health Organization. And so much of what they are doing is an attempt to undermine our sovereignty and to put America last and not America first. And that's why, again, I think it's laughable. Try to tie me in any way, shape or form to some of these things, because I am the only America first candidate in this race.
Yeah. And you've had some pretty big endorsements by other America first candidates, Carrie Lake. What are some of the other endorsements you've received?
Yeah, it's been really, really remarkable. But we've received the endorsement of Mark Levin. I was on his program again just last week. I was able to sit down with him for a while at CPAC. He spoke right before me. But Mark Levin is phenomenal. Charlie Kirk. We've got Rick Grinnell and Kash Patel, who are very, very close to President Trump. Kash introduced me at an event that we had recently at Mar-a-Lago. And then Carrie Lake, as you mentioned, we've got Senator Tommy Tuberville from Alabama. And I'm the only one in this race that has the endorsement of a sitting U.S. senator. And I'm going to be careful about my endorsements. I mean, these are people that I want to be able to work with. These are America first, I think, patriots. And I want to be able to caucus with them in the U.S. Senate. And I've been building this type of coalition from day one. But Senator Tuberville, by the way, is going to be out here. We're going to be announcing next week, and he's going to be doing some campaigning for us. So you're the first. We're announcing that actually here on your show, Michelle. But awesome. March 15th and 16th, we'll have Senator Tuberville in town, and we'll be doing a number of events that you'll be able to see. We also have a lot of great organizations. I mean, we've got Veterans for Trump, which has endorsed me. We've got the Oil and Gas Workers Association of America because of my energy stance. We also have the Fraternal Order of Police statewide. We've got Moms for America. I've got about 100 local elected officials, my colleagues, other mayors and city council members and county commissioners that have endorsed my candidacy. And I think that's incredible, because they see that I am one that's willing to stand up to the establishment, that the status quo in the establishment is our problem right now. And I've demonstrated that ability in my 10 years in elected office to always stand up, to push back, that as a mayor, I said, I'm on the front line of pushing back against governmental overreach, whether it's federal, state, or county. We're pushing back against government overreach and really understand federalism and the proper role of government. And being in that local perspective is going to be super important, I think. That's what we need in D.C. representing us, somebody that understands local governance is what governs best.
Absolutely. Very well said. Yeah, there was a Senate debate down here in Washington County not too long ago that you attended, and you did very well, by the way. I don't think that there was mention earlier of John Curtis, and I would consider that to be definitely probably the largest establishment candidate in this race, who has probably the establishment most behind him. And I don't think that his representative down here did him many favors when she mentioned the name or the words climate change several times. I think every time climate change, everyone was kind of rolling their eyes. And then he did get called out for not supporting President Trump. And, you know, she tried to say, oh, no, that's not true. And then it was like, OK, has he endorsed Trump? Well, no. OK. So anyway, I find it interesting when candidates are not just straightforward. This is who I am. This is what I support. This is what I stand for. That's what I really appreciate in a candidate. And you've come across that way for me. So, you know, speaking of these other candidates in the race, obviously, we've got convention coming up very soon. We are on a short timeline. You are convention only. Why should people vote for you over these other candidate options that are going to be at the state convention?
Well, great question. And what I've been telling the people as I'm talking to them is that I know what time it is. This is a very, very important time. The reason we have all these challenges and the $34 trillion plus in debt, we've got an open border, we've got a regulation. I mean, and if you're a business owner, you get this. I mean, there's so much regulation, about 100,000 pages of regulation that comes at us from unelected bureaucrats every single year. It's just, it's way too much. We need to take a chainsaw to it. But the debt, the border, regulation, weaponization of federal agencies against its citizenry. I mean, we're seeing some incredible things right now. We have got to have somebody that's willing to stand up. The reason we're in this problem is because we've got too many weak and feckless politicians that have not been willing to stand up and push back on the establishment. Instead, they go back to DC. They're all too eager to become part of the establishment. They want to ingratiate themselves in that culture. And that is not me. That's why we put it TrentStags.com. There's a page there called Proven Fighter, and it documents all of these things where I have had the strength to be able to stand up and say no and take on the establishment, even at a time when it wasn't very popular to do that. I mean, I'm the only one that took on Mitt Romney, and that's documented there at my site. I was the one that came out and endorsed Trump last summer, even at a time when maybe DeSantis, I think, was neck and neck with him in the polls or even slightly ahead in some polls. I said no to mask and vaccine mandates. And I know this is something that you were a champion on too, just pushing back against that, Michelle. You know, it's very well documented from the very beginning. I said no to Salt Lake County, to what I was an unconstitutional directive that you couldn't have more than 10 people gather at a time. I went straight to my city. I said no on mask mandates and vaccine mandates. We stayed open in Riverton. We never shut down. We always had in-person meetings. We kept our city hall open. I had many people ask to come and do events in our community because we always stayed open. So there's that. There's me fighting ESG, me fighting inappropriate materials in school, high density housing, calling out the illegal immigration issue back in October, when ICE came and met with me and it designated Utah a sanctuary state in a memo they released last May. I mean, just time and time again, I've been willing to stand up and push back. That's what's needed. And also my experience being in elected office and running a business. We need somebody that understands federalism, that understands that government closest to the people is what governs best. And that's what my experiences have instructed me. That's what I'm going to do as I go back to Washington, D.C. and represent the people of this great state.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's when I actually first started following you, was actually through COVID, when I'm like, finally, an elected representative who is saying I will not enforce these ridiculous mandates, because I heard very little of that from most elected officials here in the state of Utah, which was extremely disappointing. So I really appreciated that about you. And it really says something moving forward. I think I've been telling people, you know, if you want to know about a candidate, just look at what they were doing during 2020, 2021. Were they pushing all the virtue signaling and just going along to get along? Or were they radio silent because they were too afraid to say anything and stand up for what was right? So I certainly appreciate that about you. I also want to touch on illegal immigration, which we've talked about some, but there's been a lot of debate recently, and I think since that whole ICE discussion, of is Utah a sanctuary state or are we not? And are we actually properly dealing with the issue here in the state of Utah?
Well, I think, you know, ICE, I met with the Salt Lake City field office director last October. He had a memo that was from May that designated Utah as a sanctuary state. And it was basically a de facto status. It was because of our policies. you know, the policies of jails not cooperating with ICE. And understandably, you know, we've talked about this. I understand why county sheriffs and county jails wouldn't want to cooperate with them, because they have a 700-page agreement. It's incredibly onerous. They have all kinds of requirements and mandates. And that's something that Congress needs to change, that they should change, and I will change when I get into office. But other states like Texas have stepped up and they've shielded county sheriffs and jails from litigation, from the ACLU and other groups that really want to keep this open border situation, the no borders crowd, they want to keep it open. And so my appeal back in October to the governor and to the Senate president and to then Speaker Wilson was to say, look, you guys need to do something. You need to step up and be like Texas and actually not place all the onus and burden on county sheriffs and jails. Go do something. And they claimed at the time that, well, we can't be the backstop to a failed federal immigration policy. And I thought that's absurd. I mean, yes, the federal government has absolutely failed us. The Biden administration has been horrible. This is not rocket science. Let's go back to what worked under President Trump, namely build the wall, remain in Mexico, let's do E-Verify, and other things that will make sure that everybody knows these are the laws, this will be enforced, and we stop the magnetization of the massive illegal immigrations that we have right now. So that needs to be done. I think that under a lot of pressure, ICE changed their memo, but the policies haven't changed with the state that led to the designation as a sanctuary state to begin with. And I think that's sad. I think that for Utah to be left, for us to be left of ICE, where we're in a situation where ICE is coming to us saying, we need you to do a little more. That's not great. We need to be able to step up. And some of the policies at the state legislature, too, where they allow driver's licenses for illegal immigrants and where they gutted, and one of my opponents in this race, Brad Wilson, he gutted the E-Verify provision. They took it from, if you had 15 employees or more, you had to use E-Verify. They jumped it all the way up to 150 and basically exempted almost every company, you know, 80, 90% of all businesses. So the word is out on the street, is according to ICE, that Utah is a great place. They don't deport. Because jails aren't cooperating right now in terms of a detention more than 72 hours. And that's what's really brought a lot of people here to our state. And I know they're working 100, 150,000 open cases right now. So the illegal immigration situation is really, it's a disaster everywhere. But even in our own state, we see a lot of issues. And there's a lot of costs associated with having such a large illegal immigration population.
Absolutely. Yeah, that one issue alone, you know, and I'll see people, oh, how could you support Trump? It's like, okay, hey, look at our options. That one issue of illegal immigration alone, look at the vast change from Trump to now the Biden administration. And, you know, I have no confidence that Haley would be any help whatsoever in multiple areas. But that's one issue for sure that people should be looking at. That alone is enough to support President Trump over these other candidates. So one of my favorite things probably that I've heard you talk about and support is you talk about the separation of woke and state. Can you hit on that? Because for me, I feel like, you know, along with actually several of the issues that you already hit on, but this attack on the family, I mean, that's really, you want to see a downfall of civilization, break apart the family, the bedrock of society. And this woke ideology and agenda is a huge part in that. So talk about your position on that.
Yeah, 100%. And that should have been added to the list, right? When we talked about what are some of the main dangers that we're confronted with right now in terms of the maintenance of our constitutional republic. And it's the degradation of the family. And the woke progressive left, that's what they want to do. I mean, communism, that's what it was all about. They wanted to get rid of people's faith and belief in God and also break down the family. And so what I've said from the very beginning, I mean, for the 10 months or more that I've been campaigning, our messaging hasn't changed, Michelle. You go to TrentStags.com, it's the same messaging. I say, as your senator, I will champion every day smaller government, safer families, and a stronger economy. And the safer families, get rid of the Department of Education. We've talked about that. It has far too much influence control over the lives of our parents and students here in the state. I've got state school board candidates or state school board officials that have endorsed my candidacy because of my position there. The Second Amendment is very, very important. We have an inalienable right to life and the protection of our own and our families. And then I say, yes, separation of woke and state. We need to not be so concerned with the separation of church and state as we need to be woke and state, which really has become its own ideology. And it's been, unfortunately, it's been wholeheartedly embraced and endorsed by this Biden administration. It's made its way into the military, into education, into almost every facet, every agency. And so with Congress having the power of the purse, we need to do what, like Senator Tuberville, right, who's endorsed my candidacy, what he did and stood up and said, look, we're not going to deal with this anymore. We're not going to fund programs that that try to advance this insidious ideology of wokeism. And whether that's through, CRT or DEI or having drag shows on military bases or what have you, that's just totally inappropriate. And we need to guard ourselves against that. And Congress, by all means, shouldn't be funding it. And they've got that power to be able to do just that, ensure that when they pass a budget, that these types of programs receive no funding whatsoever, and that it isn't allowed to be written in some way, shape, or form, and made its way into all these different agencies. So that's something that I've committed to day one, that we will always, always champion safer families and try to do all we can to safeguard the family.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. And that slashing of the U.S. Department of Education, I think, is a big one. Are there any other of the three-letter agencies that you think have run amok that we can rein in a little bit more or a bit more?
Yeah, I mean, the FBI. I mean, Vivek Ramaswamy talked about this in his campaign trail. And, there's a lot there that needs a complete overhaul, if not completely disbanding, some of these organizations that are duplicative. I think there's a lot of other agencies at the local level or even in the federal government that fulfill the same same or have the same mission. And so we need, I think, give it a sweep top to bottom on these various agencies. The EPA has a lot of control, and the FDA, I've been dealing with that, and I see what they do. And through the power of regulation, and oftentimes they'll weaponize and just target certain businesses and individuals and go after them. It's just, it's disastrous. I mean, it destroys people's businesses and livelihoods for very, very suspicious and really, I would dare say, things that don't even really are outside their scope. So, yes, there are a number of agencies that I think need a complete overhaul, and that's something that I'm looking forward to being able to do. I mean, I think if you've seen the new president of Argentina, where he has
he's them all amazing, on the board, amazing. Said,
nope, we don't need this. We don't need that. I mean, I think we need to be at that point in our country, because we have far too many federal agencies and employees that are doing things that would be better served at a local level or just by private industry altogether.
Absolutely. Yeah. If anyone hasn't seen his speech, I'm drawing a blank on his name now, the president that spoke at the World Economic Forum. Did you catch that speech where he's essentially talking about really their own organization and problems that they've created and socialism and how that creates poverty, and essentially saying right in front of them, you're the problem? That was pretty epic. I really loved that speech. So we just have 1 minute left here, Trent. Thank you for coming on and, providing some clarity of some questions that I know have been going around. Any last thoughts? How can people support you? And anything else you want the voters to know?
Well, I appreciate coming on. And like I said, I think that's what differentiates me, my ability to stand up, push back on the establishment. I've been saying for a long time, if you want another Mitt Romney, don't vote for me. If you want another Mike Lee, I'm your guy. I'll go back there. We'll stand up to the establishment. We'll bring an America First agenda, work with President Trump. I've already been building a lot of great relationships there, and be able to get this country back on track. I mean, we need to be able to do that for my children, for yours, for successive generations. And my wife and I are in this 100%, and we're committed to do just that and work every day, work hard for Utahns. And for those that want to help us out, can go to TrentStaggs.com, S-T-A-G-G-S, and go there, donate, and help volunteer.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Trent. See you guys next time.
Thanks for being a part of the Michelle Tanner Podcast. Please like, follow, subscribe, and share. And always remember to keep exposing truth.
But I won't back down. No, I won't back down.
This has been a production from a podcast studio.